ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 2, Text 44. Suyagyo nanvayam shete, mudhayam manushochata, yashrota yonu vakteha, sanadrishyeta karhichit. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya for whom you lament is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. For you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, for the body you have always seen is lying here. Purport. This instruction by Yamaraj in the form of a boy is understandable even for a common man. A common man who considers the body the self is certainly comparable to an animal. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuke sa eva gokharaha. But even a common man can understand that after death a person is gone. Although the body is still there, a dead man's relatives lament that the person has gone away. For a common man sees the body but cannot see the soul. As described in Bhagavad Gita, Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. The soul, the proprietor of the body, is within. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, one can understand that the person within the body who was hearing and replying has now gone. Therefore, in effect, the common man concludes that actually the spirit soul was different from the body and has now gone away. Thus, even a common man coming to his senses can know that the real person who was within the body and was hearing and replying was never seen. For that which was never seen, what is the need of lamentation? Yamaraj continuing his discourse to the family of the dead king. He calls them fools. O lamenters, you are all fools. The person named Suyagya for whom you lament is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause of your lamentation? Previously he heard you, replied to you, but now not finding him, you are lamenting. The relatives are not saying that they don't find him. They talk to him as if normally we see in the case of someone's sudden demise, the near and dear ones, they take the body, they hug it, and they say, please speak. Please open your eyes. Please, don't you realize, like we see in Chitraketu's story, his queen, Kritadyuti, taking the lifeless corpse of her boy in her lap, please, it's now time for you to eat. Please open your eyes. There is a undercurrent somewhere that he may not open his eyes any time, and that fear, although this fear is not ill-founded, it is not without any foundation, but then the emotion takes over and you still keep on requesting that dead body to open any of its functions. Abhiram Gopal Thakur Prabhu, one of the Vanaprasthas in our ashram, when he was sick, one night
he was about to be administered some plasma platelets. So, we were knowing it could happen any time. But one day it was 12:30 in the night that suddenly his health became complicated. And myself and one devotee, we drove to the Tata Memorial Hospital where these plasma sachets were available. So by the time we reached, it must be about 1:15, and there was no traffic on the road. I was waiting down and I saw that one rat, a big gutter rat, was run over by a car or a vehicle and he was dead in the streets. And his companion, there would be sparsely no traffic. Just in 15-20 minutes, one car would go by or someone would walk. So I saw for those 3-4 minutes that this rat would go towards his dead companion and turn him over, poke him. And when he would see another vehicle coming, he would again rush towards safety. But I was seeing that he was watching. Again, there would be no traffic, all clear. He would again go and poke him as if, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to, this is a dangerous place. It's a street. Come back. Everyone's waiting. And I was thinking in my mind, if ever we could give this rat this understanding that he's not going to come back again, he's dead. So from that perspective, how difficult it is to understand what actually the soul is. And when the Shastra or Mahajanas like Yamaraj, they call conditioned soul fools, how much justified it is. When I read this purport, I was just trying to assess that, why is it that normally when some real important discussion about the soul comes in any scripture, it's generally surrounding death. During the time of birth, hardly anyone realizes that a soul is born, a soul has come into this world. Look at the soul, look at how nice a soul is, look at how nice his body this soul has taken. It never comes like that. So birth is seen as natural. Birth is seen as happy event. And death is seen as just the opposite. So at least we can deduce from this that living is our birthright. Now whether eternal living is our birthright or not is a different thing. But we all want to live. Of course, when this living becomes too complicated, people say, I want to die. But that's like a disease condition. Normally, self-preservation is the law. In a very interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins his exposition on the science of the soul. And in this verse he says, Ascharyavat paschati kashchidenam, Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanya, Ascharyavat chainam anyashrinoti, Shutva piyenam vedana chaiva kashchit. He's saying, O Arjun, please try to understand, Ascharyavat paschati kashchidenam. Some people, or very few kashchid, can understand what the soul is. Ascharyavad vadati tathaiva chanya. Very few can actually speak about the soul. Ascharyavad chainam anya shrinoti. few can understand or few try to hear what the soul is. And after even hearing, very few people can actually realize what the soul is. Prabhupada has given like a one angle understanding of this verse. Burijan Prabhu, in his Surrender Unto Me and in his Gita Overview, he gives another angle from Baldev Vidyabhushan's Gita Bhushan commentary. We will go to that later. First, in that very nice purport, Prabhupada says, why is it so difficult for people to understand what the soul is? Like, why is it difficult for a common man to understand rocket science? You may say, well, I never went to college. I don't know what is liquid fuel. I don't know what are solid boosters. I don't know anything about it. So then there is, like, in at least in today's age, we have rocket science made easy. Someone just takes out a book, just 20 pages, tries to describe very simple, down-to-earth language. Some people like it, some don't like it. Some say this is dumbing down of anything. It's a fact. You can also try it yourself. For many who say that Einstein's theory of relativity is this, it's that, it's good or it's not so good, hardly anyone has read the full thesis. They have read a book which describes the theory of relativity, or they have heard somebody else's views on what that theory is. In India, for that matter, Manu Samhita, Manu's views on social life is like a big controversial topic. In fact, there is even a favorite abuse word, Manuvadi. They call people who want to have something to do with Varnashram as Manuvadi. But when asked, how many of you who are the antagonists, who don't like this system or don't like this, how many of you have read the whole book? They say, we heard it's bad, very bad. So that's the difficulty. I think it was Mark Twain who quipped that a classic is a book which you always want to keep on your bookshelf, but never have the time or inclination to read it. Same is the case with these classical theories about understanding very tough subject matters. We have to accept life is very hectic, intelligence is short, degraded, life is always disturbing. But Prabhupada says, the main reason why people don't understand what the soul is, he says, is a poor fund of knowledge to begin with. And then he says, people are not austere. Now that's surprising. What austerity has to do with understanding the dimensions of the Atma? But the fact is that spiritual life is a culture in itself. In that purport, like, I could see there are like three stages. The first stage is where no knowledge, like somebody is born as a pygmy in Africa, aborigine in Australia, or Eskimo, or for that matter in Bombay, in a skyscraper. So in the first part, your life is filled with finding herbs, roots, or making an igloo, or painting on a cave. And similarly, in his skyscraper life in Bombay, it is filled with MTV and partying and this and that, or pollution. Or in some places, it's warfare, urban warfare. Either way, either if you are rich, poor, politically active, inactive, beautiful or ugly, the current lifestyle makes sure that you have no time to understand what the soul is, no time to even ask the right people. So that is the first stage. You cannot understand. Secondly, Prabhupada says in the next line, it could be that few people would actually try to understand, expand their vistas through good association. If there is a lecture series, understand what the soul. What is the chance that in Bombay, someone could actually see that advertisement and come there? It's a very, very less probability. A few years ago, I was at a roadside, they pile on books. Sometimes you have ISKCON books also given by some people. So I saw one or two books and I asked him, there was this book here, Atma, where is it gone? So he said, Are Maharaj, Atma chodo, computer. He said, What? Atma, Atma, you are saying? Computers, ask about computers. See this whole 7-8 pile full of computer books. So when expediency or just filling your belly, making a job, making a living, that kind of thing tides over these issues, then suddenly understanding what the soul and everything goes way to the back, not in the back burner, it is out of the stove completely. But few who could come to some good association, and Prabhupada says that, and that danger is especially in India, you come to such, like a Kumbh Mela, in the Kumbh Mela you have 3,000 camps. Every camp has a satsang program in the evening. Our camp has morning, evening, some have at least in the evening. And there is something about some Puranic Katha, some sense of self-realization. But the danger is, Prabhupada points out in the purport, the speaker would be too quick to come to a conclusion. Therefore, Atma is equal to Paramatma. How many times have you seen people in India? Swamiji, we also know Atma so Paramatma, right? Atma is equal to Paramatma. They are both the same. And that's the danger. I mean, you have come so much up trying to understand, and then you come to a complete erroneous conclusion that the soul and the super soul are both one and the same. Prabhupada points out, it's very difficult to find someone who has perfectly understood the Atma and the Paramatma, their respective functions and relationships, and who has derived full benefit from that. Now that's like the last thing. You have to derive full benefit from understanding the relationship between the Atma and the Paramatma. To end the purport, Prabhupada says, the easiest process to find what the soul is, sometimes it's really amazing. Why Krishna used this word ashcharyavat so many times? To say that a microbe, like a small microbe who may be going on your page, even smaller than a dot, I don't know if you have played with them, but sometimes I take a ballpoint pen and just keep in front of them. He changes his direction, goes somewhere else. Now what does it mean? You may say, he moved. No, not he moved. He has a brain. He has sensory things inside which understood there is an obstacle. There was a navigation thing inside which changed direction. There is a mobility which went in another direction. Exactly like a human being may go, or we have toys, you know, those remote control toys, radio controlled aeroplanes or whatever, and the skill is in how you control them so they don't dash against something. Now, if we are intelligent enough to put something in a toy, or we are like the big toy made by Krishna, and this is such a small thing, a small microbe, but still it has navigation, it has a mind, it has something to interpret this data. Now just imagine all that the human brain has, minus a few things here and there, maybe smaller memory or whatever, all that compressed, this tiny body, maybe not 2 millimeters longer. And the same thing you see in a sperm whale weighing 30 tons. Its heart, the size of a Santro car. Yeah, that's what they describe, or an ambassador car. The whale's heart, when you see a car, you understand, the whale has a heart this size. The brain doesn't match the size though. The brain is like a small suitcase. That's why there is no memory and there are no other functions. But that is a heart length, 30 feet. Sometimes even more. So much of tonnage, so much of bulk, rows of teeth inside, razor sharp, can shred any other fish to bits. And the same soul, only one, 1/10,000 tip of a hair in this microbe, in an elephant. And of course, Bhagavatam doesn't stop at what wonders we see in our world. Bhagavatam has a description of Timingala fish. Now, Timi is a fish which is bigger than the whale. And Timingala is something which swallows Timi fish. Then it is much bigger than that. Prabhupada was describing about Shena eagles. Like Shena is a form of a bird. The closest English equivalent is an eagle. And Prabhupada said, yes, they fly from one planet to another. And devotees were asking, really? He said, yes. They drop their eggs in mid-space. The eggs fall and they crack. They incubate and new bird is born. And at one such discussion, one devotee said, oh, it's amazing. I never known that. Prabhupada said, what have you known yet? You're not yet out of your mother's embryo. So normally our reaction would be, oh, I had never seen that. I had never known that. So Prabhupada would have this rejoinder. What have you seen? You mean to say your knowledge is the whole gamut of entire knowledge? So therefore this is a stumbling block. We have to agree. And we have materialistic scientists trying to understand, okay, we have heard so many times, soul, 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 soul. One, somebody tried to weigh the soul, like put a dead man on a very exact balance and he dies and find the difference, what happened. Or put a dying man in a glass enclosure, airtight it, and see what happens. I know these are all hearsay things, but some say that the whole thing cracked. That's what make them understand that, oh, there must be a soul. That's why he went out. But that's not factual. The soul is described as anti-material. Krishna is not using very high philosophy that's what Prabhupada is trying to convey us here. I had this question in my mind, why Krishna doesn't describe to Arjun, like, Arjun, I'll tell you what the Atma is. Why he talks of tat, that, it, this, in that kind of language? Because it's a great science, it's a lengthy process. The Bhagavad Gita is like, you can call it, what do they call this, Spiritual Life for Dummies, you know, those series of books. A whole difficult concept, but made very concise and simple. So Vedas for dummies, and that's the Bhagavad Gita. In 45 minutes, 70 minutes, the entire thing. But just see, the same concept applies there, that lamentation. Arjuna is in great lamentation. So therefore, in the beginning, you have to understand what exactly is the soul? And amazingly, according to those, amazingly, Krishna never touches that point again. Once in second chapter, the soul is treated to some length. Its dimension is not mentioned, but what does it do? What it doesn't do? The main point is the body is perishable. And that which is inside the body is not. Dehino asmin. Like there are some Sanskrit scholars here, or budding Sanskritists here. Asmin is inside, isn't it? It has to be inside. Asmin doesn't mean attached or somewhere near. Asmin is in it. So dehino, the dehi. Now dehi means, it can never mean deha. When you say driver, it can never mean the car. When you say tenant, it doesn't mean the apartment any point of time. But still, Prabhupada used to say, there are big, big philosophers who say that, Swamiji, when the body dies, the owner of the body also dies. And Prabhupada would like angrily say, where did they get this concoction from, this information from? Where does it say that? If you agree that there are two, body and the owner of the body, car and a driver, apartment and a tenant, where does it say that when this is finished, that necessarily has to be finished? In fact, in one conversation, Prabhupada said, a tangawala in India knows that. Someone who, rickshawala, who pulls a rickshaw, he knows that. If you ask him, why are you like that? Bad karma, previous karma. But this life is temporary. So life being temporary and perishable was a cornerstone of Prabhupada's preaching. If we take a historical perspective, Vishwanatha Chakravartipad wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, but was not his main exposition. That's not the main thing which he sort of requested his disciples or others to propagate. Even up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. But A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as a founder Acharya of ISKCON, and coming in this world at a very crucial stage, for example, we can safely say, based on Prabhupada's statement, that history will mark this point, that the Hare Krishna movement has saved the world from its darkest hour. But modern historians say, well, 1960s was like a very exciting time. Booming economy, flower power, the hippies. But according to someone who knows the science of the soul, it was like the darkest hour. So therefore, although the easiest process is to just accept the words of Krishna, accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord and accepting His statements, Prabhupada says that, to end the purport, unless one has performed penance and austerities in this life or in the previous life, one cannot come to accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So then we may wonder, what about us? I am the first. I never had given any thought to spiritual life. I never had made that a priority in my own life. So that also Prabhupada clarified once. In a commentary on this, a verse where the Bhagavatam says, Anaprishtam api bruyur guravo dinavatsala. A guru, anaprishtam, even though he is not asked specifically about spiritual life, about the soul, he gives that knowledge. Why? Dina vatsala. That's what ultimately it comes down to. Like if you find a businessman who went from one bankruptcy to another, and suddenly you find him driving a car, you say, hey, what happened? Did your business succeed? Well, no, I got a grant from the government. That means you surely know that one after another his businesses were failures, but still now he's in a nice car because the government gave a big grant. Okay, take this, all your previous debts are solved, start something fresh. Something similar, the Prabhupada said, I made, to those disciples who asked, who created our good fortune? We never did any penance. Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. Now, because of that good fortune, you could ask the proper questions. Good fortune doesn't make someone just spiritual. That good fortune makes you easy to understand that there could be Krishna, there could be something like the soul. And then when you accept that culture, then it steadily you can progress from one stage to another. We know these words. Sarvopanishado gavo dugdha gopala nandana partho vatsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gita mritam mahat. The Gita is like a cow. Kam duk. That's what the Sanskrit poetry talks of, a cow. A cow of plenty. So if all Upanishads can be compared to a cow of plenty, who can give as much as you want, Partha, Arjun is the calf. Krishna, Gopal Nandana is the one who is milking. And Sudhir, those with superior intelligence, good intelligence, they are the ones who are tasting the milk. One fine point about milking cows is that a cow doesn't give milk just because you are milking it. It only gives milk when it sees its calf. The normal routine I saw in Mayapur in our farm too, that in the evening during milking time, they send the calf. The cow sees the calf, starts licking it. There is so much of love. And then milk starts flowing. Then they feed the calf that milk. And normally they just wean it away and then you take it for yourself. So in one sense, no conditioned soul can demand that I need spiritual knowledge. It's my birthright. Because they have turned away from Krishna. Krishna Bahirmukha. So the Bhagavad Gita is not given because people demanded it. Oh, we want the Gita, we want the Gita. No, they have no knowledge to even demand it. And no qualification to receive it. So what to do in such a case? If no one demands something and they don't have the qualification to ask it, you intervene. So that's what Krishna did. He put Arjun into that situation where he would ask this kind of questions or he would be in a very confused state of mind. And when this Partha, Arjun, that calf approached this cow, the cow gave milk with such bountiful measure. And that's how the rest of us can enjoy that. This purport mainly deals about understanding what the soul is as any common man can do it. In one sense, any common man can understand, provided there is a proper way of understanding. And Prabhupada mentions here, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, when the breath within the nostrils have stopped, one can understand that a person within the body who was hearing and replying has now gone. I think in almost every language, someone can correct me if it is not available in their own language, there is a word gone for someone dying. How is it possible that every language of the world has this one word among many that is gone? In English you may say kick the bucket, but that's like you kick only when you are in the last stage. There is a kick, isn't it? So it has been connected to something going. Who has gone? If Suyagya, the king who was so loving the body, if he's the body, then he's lying there. Take him home. As Radha Gopinath Prabhu used to give that example of some relative, this old lady and her husband living together for so many years. One day he died. So they called everyone else. And the morning was the funeral ceremony. So they had to keep that person, that dead body, in the house. And she said, I can't sleep in that room. He would say, why? Last 27 years you were together. He said, no, I can't sleep with it. Now suddenly the husband has become it. It's he, the man you married. So loving, so caring. No, now he's gone. Now it is it. So who was the husband? The one who left or the one who's there? This is the understanding. And of course, as Lord Krishna then, right from that launch pad of second chapter, of making Arjuna understand that the body is different from the soul And that was Prabhupada's cornerstone of preaching. So many philosophers go through those conversations. People would come, they would talk about what have to do about this problem in society, that problem in society. And Prabhupada would very deftly bring the conversation to who is the person? What is your understanding of a person? So, to solve life's problems, to describe that one is a soul, the soul is 1/10,000th of the air, and all that seems completely impractical. Not seems, sometimes it is impractical. But then Prabhupada points out, when you come to the solution part, that is the only thing that works. Otherwise, you end up like animals. Like in that rat society, in that gutter, they would have had a condolence meeting. Oh, he was such a nice one. He was very caring. He was very gentle. That kind of lamenting, that kind of rejoicing has no value. In Sanskrit, there is a term called Aranya Rudan. That means crying in the forest. Normally, if you cry, you expect a response. Little kids, if they are hurt, they start crying. If they see somebody is watching, they cry more. Because now they expect a response. They expect someone to care. Oh, you may find out, if you find a small kid stumbling and about to cry and looks around, nobody there. What's the benefit of crying now? I'm not going to get any sympathy. Similarly, even in material life, material death, most people feel, if I leave, what will happen to this, what will happen to that? Prabhupada said, Napoleon was lamenting, no, what will happen to France? Prabhupada said, France is still there, where is he? So, there is no, the world will go on, surely it will go on. The exact opposite is seen in the lives of great souls. Haridas Thakur is telling Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, an insect like me, if he leaves, what's the harm in this world? And Lord Chaitanya is saying, no, Haridas, don't say that. If you leave, I do not find any reason to be alive in this world. And of course, when Haridas Thakur left, Lord Chaitanya was lamenting. We may say, how? If he's spiritual, that means spiritual, but don't lament. No. I once asked a devotee, what exactly do we mean when we lament about some devotee passing away? If he was in a very precarious condition, Krishna has relieved him. Like, body is racked by cancer or some other disease or in a difficult condition. Surely the passage is something better. So where is the question of lamenting? So he said, true, there is a question of rejoicing because somebody has gone to Krishna or at least one step closer to Krishna. But the main reason for lamenting is, I have lost a chance to serve him or her. I could have served in a much better way. So if these relatives of Suyagya, this story king, are lamenting, and if Narottam Das Thakur is saying, in the absence of Ramchandra Kaviraj, I feel like dashing my head against a stone, will we tell him that, but he's not his body, Thakur. You don't need to lament. He's gone to Krishna. We would be the biggest fools. Because here Thakur is not lamenting for the body. There the only understanding is associate, have Krishna Katha together and serve Krishna. That chance is gone. Lord Chaitanya laments in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna is independent. He is independently all merciful. So he gave me Haridas Thakur's association. And because he is supremely independent, he has taken it away. What can I ask as an explanation? How can I ask him why he did that? So therefore, devotees, when we are in contact with each other's material bodies, we don't see each other's material bodies. We take care of it to the extent possible. And when someone dear leaves, we lament. surely. But not lamenting as Chitraketu's wife or Suyagya's relatives, but that lamentation is that we lost a chance to serve together. And we pray that we may get that chance again. And because Krishna consciousness is the science of immortality, surely that chance always comes. It's just a gap. So that is the culture. That's how the science of the soul addresses life's questions or life's issues. Bereft of that, it's just darkness. There could be some happiness in darkness, but there is no solution. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gantara Shrimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki.